Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hunt of a lifetime. Changing lives one adventure at a time, empowering kids with courage. Join us in creating memories for kids facing life-threatening illnesses. We are here to make dreams come true. From magical outdoor escapades to heartwarming experiences, every moment is cherished. With every step of our young heroes, find a network of support, love, families, volunteers, and friends unite to uplift spirits and spread smiles. Amidst breathtaking landscapes, kids find strength they never knew they had. Together, we conquer challenges and celebrate victories. Be a part of the movement that transforms lives. Your contribution can bring courage and hope where it's needed most. Go to huntofalifetime.org to get involved. Let's create a world of cherished moments and unstoppable bravery.
Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other Game Wardens on our adventures, protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experience of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigation, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and this is Warden's Watch.
Brought to you in part by XS Sight, the fastest sight in any light. Securit Gun Storage. Maine Operation Game Thief. White Mountain Community College Conservation Law Program. New Hampshire Wildlife Heritage Foundation. And the Game Warden Museum. How sweet it is! Episode 125 of the Warden's Watch podcast. And we're stepping outside the norm, although I don't even know if there's a norm with Warden's Watch. But I do try to keep it warden-related, warden-specific. So we're always talking game wardens stuff on Warden's Watch. And we're still talking game warden stuff. This time with Game Warden Chris Simmons from Maine and Ken St. Pierre from New Hampshire. And you guys will probably recognize them both from Northwoods Law. And now we're talking maple syrup. And what got me this idea was that as a kid, I started, and I kind of interact with this podcast too, but these guys really interact with each other, which I find very interesting, and I think you will too. But as a kid, I did maple syrup. And it was kind of a neat thing in the spring, that transitional time of year from spring to, well, winter to spring. And it was just, it was a cool family thing to do in the Northeast. And there are so many game wardens that do this on a very small stage to a very, you know, decent sized stage. Like both of these guys sell their maple syrup, and you can access Simmons and Daughters maple syrup. If you Google that, I'm sure Chris and his family come up. And then Ken St. Pierre with Big Lake maple syrup too. Both game wardens that sell their products. There are quite a few others that do, I believe, especially when you get into Vermont. Vermont, as everybody knows, is king of maple syrup in the United States. The king is really Canada. I don't want to leave our brothers and sisters out up there. The king is Canada. They do a lot of maple syrup. But Vermont is next with the United States. And then, yeah, I don't even know where the stats are after that. And you can go as far, we were talking about after the fact, I think some Wisconsin people do maple syrup, of Kentucky. It's where you have maple trees, you have a window there, depending how long your window is to make maple syrup. But a great family thing, you can just use a bucket and a fire and actually make maple syrup. So, but seeing how so many game wardens do this, I thought it would be a really cool thing. Maple syrup season's just winding down here. People are cleaning up pretty much in the United States, I believe, unless maybe you're in northern Maine, you still have a run. I bet Canada's still ongoing at this point. So I wanted to bring this in season, in time, so everybody can think maple syrup. And really enjoyed the conversations with these two game wardens from Maine and New Hampshire and their passion about maple syrup and their passion about family and their passion about their job. So, hey, like always, I enjoyed this one. I hope you do too.
On this Warden's Watch, we're sitting down with Chris Simmons of the Maine Game Warden Service and Ken St. Pierre of the New Hampshire Fishing Game. And we're going to talk a little maybe game warden stuff, but we're going to really focus on maple syrup, the processing, the making, because both of these guys do it in their respective areas. So Chris in Maine and Ken in New Hampshire both have maple syrup for sale. But the really cool thing is there's a lot of game wardens out there that do it from a backyard pan to, you know, very similar to what these guys do. And I just think it's really cool. It's kind of woodsy. It's kind of in our system. And, you know, even growing up, guys, I did a presentation at the science fair when I was like, I don't know, I was in like eighth grade, was maple syrup in New Hampshire, because I started off in one of these backwoods maple sugar shacks that, you know, you had to drive down in or walk down in with a tractor because there's no truck getting down there. And we used slabs and we did it. It was all like a big cart that whirled around. We'd empty up the buckets. And so I brought that into the science fair and I set up a piece of maple. I hung a bucket on it and I had all kinds of black and white pictures back then. So I love the idea of maple syrup, making maple syrup. We used to do it in our backyard when I was a kid. And the fact that you can do it in your backyard, that I'm hoping that maybe some people listening to this podcast, maybe not in South Carolina, but be like, hey, we can do that in our backyard too. And you guys can kind of give them kind of the rundown of the maple syrup world. And it's kind of a good time for year for game wardens to be busy, because it's that just before mud season, that things slow down for everybody and we can get busy making maple syrup. So thanks. I appreciate you guys. And boy, Chris is in his sugar shack. And I'll tell you what, just he's got his arch behind him, the evaporator. And it's probably the best background scene I've ever had on Warden's Watch. It just gets me fired up. It's that New England maple flavor to it, Chris. So that's epic. I'm really happy that you did that. Yeah. So how did you guys start? And maybe you want to talk with Chris first. And, you know, did you grow up with maple syrup?
Well, I like you, Wayne, it was, I did grow up with it a little bit, but it was more or less anything that holds sap. And I'm not even convinced we didn't use all the, we might have even used some gas cans. I tell them, long lady grew up around the farm. But it was my brothers and I and a bunch of buddies, because we grew up on a dairy farm, and it was kind of a lot of people hung out here because we had chores to do. And then one year we started nailing some taps into a tree, and any, like I said, anything that would hold sap, and the started out with a 55-gallon drum and a pan that we probably found on the dump or something. And then it evolved into the 275-gallon, which you guys can probably relate, the 275-gallon evaporator. And then after I got married, my wife, Shelley, she was, her dad was Dennis McIntosh. He's a retired game warden from Maine as well. And he did it, as when Shelley was a kid in a sugar shack down in the woods. And he had, Wayne, you may know this, he started up in Emden years ago, but then they moved to the southern part of the state and the shack kind of fell in, and then came Chris and Shelley. we pulled the evaporator out, and I had it rebuilt, new pans made by Leader down there in Vermont, and that was my first evaporator, and it's kind of evolved into what I have now, a new Leader evaporator, so newer now. So
very cool, very cool. Ken?
Actually quite a different story. I didn't grow up with real maple syrup. We always grew up with like Vermont made or some other corn syrup type stuff. And then probably around 2015, a coworker was making a little bit in his backyard, and I said, you know what, I'm going to try that. So I put up a sign at work asking for old soda jugs and old milk jugs that I could put underneath trees and run basically put a tap with a piece of 5/16 line and just ran it down into the bucket had probably, I don't know, 40 taps out behind my dad's house. And the story I always like to tell is I came home from work and my dad's like, what are you doing? I go, I'm going to make maple syrup. He's like, that's an awful idea. So 2 weeks later, I come home from work and I go out back to go empty all of my milk jugs. And I just hear him yell from inside, I already got it. And I'm like, yep. Okay. Awful idea. So that's how it started. Same way. We had a 55-gallon drum tipped on its side with hotel pans in it. Boiling maybe 50 gallons of sap a day, you know, that's 14-hour day. And then from there, just slowly progressed. When I bought my house in 2018, I had a little extra money saved up and said, you know what, I'm sick of wasting all my time. So I bought my Smoky Lake 2x6 evaporator, and it's been kind of just a steady increase each year. This year was our biggest year for tap wise. So it's, it all started with me. I just kind of wanted to do it, and here I am.
That's really cool, because that just inspires other people. If you get some maple trees that you have access to, because, and again, not all of it's our land for sure. I mean, maybe Chris, you're exclusively on your land, but I know Ken is always, he's got a few different spots there that he does. But that's inspiring to, and that was cool when I was a kid to have, we just had this big old plan that sat on some cinder blocks, and we'd make maybe a gallon, but you're right, it would take a very, very, very long time. But to have a fire when you're a kid hanging out and just keep reducing it, and cook hot dogs in the sap and get a little taste as it got sweeter and sweeter. It was a cool time of year to do it too, because there wasn't a lot going on. And that's really neat that you started from those grim beginnings in the maple world. And Chris, when you went in and yanked out the old arch out of the, that's really cool, because I'm sure it was an old arch, huh?
It was. In actuality, Dennis, my father-in-law, the sugar house actually fell in, and he still owned the property. And when we went and looked at it, the arch was actually the size, which were galvanized. It was all rotted out. And I had a neighbor who was a body shop man for cars. And I took the measurements. But all the front door, the legs, the base was all cast. So that was all good. And the back pan, which is for all evaporators, it's the flue pan. That's the expensive part of any evaporator, commercial evaporator. And luck had it that it was way down in the woods. You couldn't drive to it. So at the end of the year, they just boil some water and call it good. They never cleaned it or anything beyond that. But they had leaned the pan up on the back wall of the building. So when the roof fell in, it caved in with snow. It fell in like that. And so that back pan, after all those years, was actually protected. Oh. So the most expensive part of the arch of the evaporator was actually a brand new back pan. So that's what. So then I talked to the body shop guy and I said, "You ever building the evaporator?" Which I knew he hadn't. He goes, "No, but I'm willing to." So we tried to bring it out the best we could. He went up with me. We measured and he built the arch. And then it was a three pan system. So he then we took the front pan and the middle pan, which were cast and they had holes, but I took it right down to Vermont and they rebuilt new pans for me. So it was really neat. It was a 100-year arch at that point.
Yeah.
And, it worked really well. It was bigger even than the evaporator I had now. I could do, it was a 3x10. I've never could get more than 75 gallons at the most. And that was probably even a stretch to say 75, but I just got to the point where we were expanding and trying to get bigger. And finally I have an uncle as well who inspired me. He was a sugar maker in New York and we'd meet down the Bascom's, which is a sugar dealer for parts and pieces in New Hampshire over the, I'm drawing a blank on the town, but you're probably familiar. You probably heard of them.
Yeah, I have heard of them. They're over towards Lebanon, Claremont way. Right off 91, sorry. Yeah.
It's over on your far side there. Mm. But so I went down there, I met my uncle, and he hauled me into the office. And now I have it, well, this is about 8-9 years ago. After that, I had a new evaporator.
Wow. So, yeah. But, I'm sure that office hurt, too.
Yeah. That did. Yeah. That did. The funny thing was my wife says, "Well, we can sell the old evaporator, but I want to keep the front on it." I'm like, "Well, Shelly, how do you sell an evaporator without a front?" With a front door. But lo and behold, we went down to Bascom's and Ken, I don't know if you know, when you walk into the room, have you ever been to Bascom's?
Yep.
That when you walk in, you know, the big barn part, when you walk in like the dock there, there's a little room off to the right where they got old parts and pieces. And I'll be darned if they didn't have a front door system, you know, the whole front of the arch that was identical. It actually fit, you know, and it was just by lock, by lock. I bought that and Shelly got her wish. So in our sugar house, we actually have the old front and the doors, that front plate, which includes the door and the frame of her old childhood evaporator. So
oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
On display.
And those are usually pretty ornate, the old ones, aren't they, Chris?
They are. It's a neat little. It's right behind me. I'm looking at it right now. It's in the corner here. It's neat. You know. But you know what it was for me? It was like farming with an old farm all age and moving into great machine, but then moving into a modern day tractor.
And Ken, you do something a little different. When you was it Smoky Lake that you work with?
Yeah. So they're a fairly new company out of Wisconsin. I want to say they've probably been pretty big commercially for maybe 8-10 years. They've got some different designs on things, some different ways of looking at things, as opposed to Leader and CDL and LaPierre and all them. And at the time, the price was quite a bit different, cheaper through them. So I went with them and I couldn't be happier. I mean, it's husband, wife owned business. I mean, sometimes you call to ask a question and sometimes you'll get the owner, or sometimes you'll get his wife or, "Hey, you know, I can ask for Jim," and, she'll be like, "Oh, well, he's out in the shop changing light bulbs or something. Like, can I have him call you back?" I go, "Yep, no problem." So they're just really nice people to work with and, you know, they've always been really good. So I kind of took a chance with them, being a newer company, and it's worked out so far.
And their payment plan's kind of unique too, isn't it? That's what always reminds me of them too.
So yeah, so when I bought it, they worked. They teamed up with like North Star Leasing, who do a lot of like agricultural leasing and financing and stuff. So I went through them. I don't know if they that's who they still work with, but yeah, I mean, it's no different than getting a loan for a car, but
yeah, but wasn't the payment due after maple syrup season, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, so with the with their program, because like I said, they deal a lot with like agriculture people, so they know that, you know,
harvest
at
time
the end of corn season you get a big corn check. You know, at the end of maple season, usually you get that's when you sell most of your syrup. So it was kind of like a once a year payment after the season. I think it was in like June or July. Because I mean, Chris, you can attest to this, like your biggest bill is usually like December and January, because you're buying all the taps, all the lines, all the new tubing. You're getting all your bottles and containers and drums back. And it's just, that's an expensive time of year to have to pay a payment during then is pretty difficult. So
no question. No question.
And you worked through that transition, Chris, didn't you? You have buckets and then went to all the lines where I'm assuming, Ken, you kind of went to lines or, well, you went from, you know, Pepsi bottles first, but.
Yeah. So I had the soda bottles first, and then me and Dad started slowly getting a collection of 5 gallon buckets with lids. And then I still have some. This year we're at 600 taps, roughly. I think about 400 are on lines, and then we still have like 200 taps on buckets. So that's, and we've got one place downtown has 170 taps, and 50 of them are on the old galvanized buckets.
Wow,
that was kind of a deal I worked out with the landowners because they wanted an Airbnb and they wanted, you know, the aesthetics and stuff around the house. And I said, that's fine. I'll give you the buckets, but I'm not emptying them. I'm like, if you guys want the buckets, I got enough other stuff to do. I can't be down here emptying 50 buckets every other day. So they got a bunch of kids, and luckily they were able to empty the buckets. And then I have the line set up that worked perfectly. It's all hidden. You can't see it from the house. And it did really well this year. So nice. I was happy with that.
Yeah, we're very similar to, we started out with primarily buckets. When once we got the Sugar House built, we started with probably 600-700, and the name of our business is Simmons and Daughters. So I have four daughters, and they grew up in the Sugar House here. But that wasn't so bad when you had your crew of four daughters, but when your kids were home, that also meant Simmons and Daughters and all their friends. But as the girls started getting older, and you know, they obviously have lives too, which they're still great help. They still love it and come home when they can, but it made it tough. So we're now about 1,100 taps, and similar to Ken's ratio, we have about 400 buckets out now, and the rest is online. And a lot of them are on our property. You know, I might have 200 up back, 200 down front, but I have a roadside route, which is primarily still buckets. And so I'm scattered all over the place, friends and neighbors and around, which is similar to like this neck of the woods. Once obviously you get up to the Golden Road where you have those big Canadian commercial outfits, you know, 150, 60,000 taps, obviously they're all lined. But with me, I still got quite a few buckets out, enough to keep Shelley and I, and her dad is now retired from it. But he helps us. He helps us considerably when it comes to gathering and boiling now. So,
yeah, let's talk weather, because that has a big impact on a maple sugar season. And I think with the two of you, we can compare that this year even.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah, Ken, you had a pretty decent year down your way, didn't you?
Yeah. So down here it started early. I used to tap pretty religiously Valentine's Day. That was kind of my set date. And last year, it was probably a week earlier. And then this year was very end of January. I think maybe like February 1st, we started tapping. And everyone kind of got a little worried because it did warm up fast in February. You know, usually February is cold. Then you have your February thaw, usually the third or last week of February. And then March is when you're going to make your syrup. This year, February just started out warm for us, and, you know, everyone was kind of scared. And then the weather just kind of it kind of chugged on. We didn't really have long stretches of good runs, but it was 4 days of craziness followed by a week of nothing, either too warm or too cold. And then 4 or 5 days of craziness followed by another week. And then it just finally, we just finally pulled the plug, well, along with a lot of other guys I know. Last week was our last week. So it was a weird year weather-wise, just as far as very unpredictable. You know, you were always looking at the 7-day forecast to see, is this it, or are we going to have something new show up? But it works. For me, it worked out, I think, because a lot of my stuff is kind of backwoodsy. It's, you know, there's a lot of shade, a lot of snow. So the trees kind of held on better. Whereas, like Brad, they have a lot of real big south-facing orchards, and they warmed up fast, and they shut down and switched over pretty fast. So I think it was a good year for more of like the smaller backwoodsy type guys than the real big south-facing orchards that get a lot of the sun. And there's just no snow cover. We didn't have any snow cover. That was that always plays a big role too. So
And Chris, the weather in your country?
Yeah, as Ken was saying, it was really weird year. And it's funny because where I live, which is just outside of Belfast, I'm 10 miles in, I'm right on that line of inland, coastal and inland weather patterns. But coastal, we just, it stunk. Every sugar maker, like many things, has a best year and everyone has a worst year. I now can say I've had my worst year. But it just, as Ken was saying, this is the first year I've ever had a season where we didn't need a snowmobile for everything. We could get to any patch of woods by ATV. As a matter of fact, the storm that we're having as we speak right now is the worst storm of our year. We last on Maple's Saturday, on that Maple weekend, was a bad storm too, the two worst. But we could never, I could always get around with Wheeler, didn't need a snowmobile at all. And we had no snow cover, but we had so many warm nights this year. And I probably missed, there's no question, I missed that first little run in February. So I did miss that. I just didn't quite dare take the chance thinking, all right, winter may still come. And it didn't until this week. We would get so many, and then we would get so many nights. It started right out with so many nights of weather that never got below freezing, because you need that freezing nights to get down into the 20s. And then you need the warm days up into the 30s, upper 30s is ideal, and low 40s. But then, I don't know if Ken experienced this as well, but then all of a sudden we got 4 or 5 days where it was 50. And that's never good to get those 50-degree days. Then you're talking really warm. But it's funny because Josh Boobier, who I think you guys are probably familiar with, he's in Skowhegan, and he's doing it now with a friend of his, Chris Tupper. He's a trooper up that way. And this ended up being their best year for SAP ever. So, and we keep in touch, and they actually were pretty much double. We both have roughly 1,100 taps, and they were just about double of what we did this year down here, almost to the gallon.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, but it was funny. It was a weird year, but you know, as you guys know, as game wardens, we've all lost a lot of sleep over our job over the years. I try not to lose sleep over this one. It is what it is. You know, you're up on a farm and you can't, Mother Nature is one of them. You just can't fight her. So try not to lose sleep. Take what you get, and it's still fun. And Wayne, you said it earlier. To me, it's what I love about it. It's one of those deals where winter's along up here, as you guys know, in New England. And we start thinking about it. We get through Christmas. You finish up with your deer seasons, which is that no sleep month. And you kind of get to relax a little bit in December. And we do, especially with the kids. November was always, for me growing as a game warden, was always, November was for the state of Maine. December was for my family. And that's why Christmas was always a fun time of year for us. But then after New Year's, we started thinking it was every day. It was maple, maple, maple. But it was nice because it made the winter go by, you know, instead of sitting on the couch like to say sitting on the couch getting fat, which I guess I've done, even thinking about it as I get older. But it's a great thing, you know, and not only for game wardens, but for everybody. If you don't, yeah. if you're one of those people that winter gets long, get in the maple. Start, even if it's a, even if you got just a little 2x4 55-gallon drum, you can't help but start thinking about it and flipping through the catalog. You know, me with a maple syrup catalog is like when we were kids when we got the Sears wish book, you know, back in September. So you just, it really takes a lot of load off the winter, and it's just a great thing to do, and especially if you got kids, you know, they're a lot of fun. The family fun that we had in this sugar house with the kids and growing up, it's you just priceless.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the process a little, because like you can from the back door with a pan to that system you have behind you, and there's a lot of science built into it nowadays too that just I find it fascinating, to be honest with you. And Ken said there's a lot of rabbit holes we can go down, but I kind of want to tell people how they can do it, because if they've never done it, you know, encourage them to try it. And then, you know, to the RO systems, that's reversed osmosis. So I had to look that up several times before I knew what it was. But, so it's really cool, the whole process. It can be very scientific, or it can be very basic, too. So when do you guys want to tackle that?
So, and I'll let you start, Ken.
Yeah, so you really nailed it, Wayne. The making maple syrup can be as basic as you could possibly fathom. Or it can be, you know, a step short of going to the moon. I mean, you can, I don't know how many people I...
It looks like it, too.
Facebook groups and things like that are kind of dedicated to backyard syrup makers and things like that. And people are just always on there asking questions, things. And that's, I don't know about you, Chris, but the maple community... it's something like you've never seen before. It's, you know, with a lot of other stuff, you get people who are, you know, oh, I'm not going to tell you like fishing. You got guys that I got to tell you their spot. They're not going to tell you their secrets, you know, this like that. Maple is totally different. Everyone is willing to help all the time. And if you're getting into it, that's the best part of it is you could go to, you see a sugar shack on the side of the road. You can stop in there any time of year and talk shop with the guy, and he will love to fill you with his knowledge, tell you what he's done, what he hasn't done, his mistakes. And then from there, you just decide what you want to do. I mean, you can start off with 3 trees in the backyard and a turkey fryer and a pot and, you know, make a couple quarts a year and then find out if you like it or not, if you want to do it, if you want to get bigger, and... you just slowly grow. Don't get frustrated because you're going to make mistakes. You're going to do things. You're going to burn stuff. You're going to ruin a batch. You're going to drop sap. You're going to drop syrup. You're going to boil over. I mean, we've all done it a million times. And it's like I said, it's that simple. It's a heat source, a vessel, and sap, and a thermometer. A good thermometer is all you need. And you can make maple syrup. So, but then as you do get bigger, things get more involved. You can only boil so much sap in a day. It doesn't matter how big your evaporator is. And then you have to go into other things like the reverse osmosis and preheaters and, you know, how do you get your sap to the sugar house most efficiently? Everything is just building on efficiency. It's just a big balance of how much time you want to put in and how much money you want to spend. If you're starting to spend a lot of time, then you got to spend a little bit of money to kind of even it back out. And that's kind of the way I always explain it to people is it doesn't take much to make maple syrup. That's kind of the best part about it. You're making something out of nothing. That's what I like the most.
Very cool.
Yeah. My recommendation would be if you find, as Ken was saying, the turkey cooker or the 50-gallon or the 50-gallon drum, if you find that you really love it, my recommendation would be instead of dumping a whole lot of money into like more turkey cookers. You've seen it all. You've seen guy with five turkey cookers, and I know you. I know Wayne, and I don't know if Ken knows it, but Bill Livesey, you know, a legend. He used to do it every year, and he'd call me out, and, you know, hey, man, just get it. You know, he'd go on and on with his cooker, which it was good. And the syrup, you know, who makes the best syrup? The person that you got your first batch from, you ever got it from, you know? No one will ever beat Grandma's maple syrup if she is the first one that introduced you to it, right? But Bill, he'd call up every year, and it's like, Bill, go buy yourself a nice Mason evaporator. You know, they're just such phenomenal. There is such a great evaporator for a family, a little 2x3 or 2x4. I know it's money, but in the long run, like Ken said, if you want to reduce your time and you really enjoy, if you really enjoy it and you know you want to do it every year, my recommendation would be, and I'm not saying you need to go get a brand name. You don't. But get a pan with a few flues, and that way you can always pick up where you left off. You don't have to do the big batch, which is good. Again, we used to do it. But if you're going to do it year after year, invest a little bit, and then you have it. And if you take care of that little 2x3 or 2x4, you might have to spend a couple grand or get on Facebook or Craigslist. And in the long run, you'll save a lot of frustration. And it's just nice to be able to start that fire and pick up where you left off, and you take off a quart or so at a time, and then you have your product. And that way, if you lose a batch, you know, the thing about the old flat pan on the 50 gallon drum or 275, if you burn a batch, you just spent several days for absolutely nothing. And so I really like and agree with Ken. If you're to reduce your time, you do have to spend a little money, but then again, if you that 50 gallon drum, they can last forever if you're making a few gallons. But if you're going to get bigger, spend a little money and get something with some flues in it, so at least that, you know, that, or at least get by a pan with some flues, and it makes it so much easier and so much more efficient for your time and your sanity.
Oh no, very cool.
And I guess, like you said, don't be the turkey fryer guy that has, you know, 10 turkey fryers going and you're spending $1,000 in propane anyways. The other thing I try to tell people getting into it also is, kind of, once you've been in it a couple of years, figure out where you want to go. Figure out, you know, do I want to stay at 2 gallons a year, or do I maybe want to max out at maybe 20, 30 gallons a year? And then spend the money and set yourself up for that, because you're just going to lose money along the way if you go from one turkey fryer to five turkey fryers, and then you buy a 55 gallon drum, and then maybe you buy like an oil drum size thing, and then you buy something else used. Along the way, you're just wasting money. Just figure out what you want to do, set yourself up for it from the beginning, and then you're golden. Life will be so much better. That's kind of what I did when I bought mine. Is I said, I don't ever really want to go more than 1,000 taps. What can I theoretically buy that would get me by to that point? And that's where I went. I got what I did, and I said, you know what, if I find out that it's too slow, I can always, there's always upgrades. You can always put an RO in front of it, and now your evaporator is bigger than what you need, or you can put a preheater on it, and now you're going to get another 10 to 15 gallons per hour. There's just so many. Starting with the evaporator, find out what will work for you, and just get it. Just bite the bullet, get it, and then you'll never look back.
Never look back.
Yeah. And they hold their value. That's the big thing. You know, you get a 10-year evaporator, you maybe lost 40% value, 35% value. So it's a lot better than a used car.
And I've noticed too, with some of the smaller sugar makers around, that once you get bit by the bug, and it's a bug, and when it bites you, you're sucked in. If you can find a building, I have one here, I'm looking out the window at it, it's off the side of my regular sugar house. I built a bunch of 8x12 sugar houses, and I have a little Mason evaporator. It's a little 2x3. If you get bit by the bug, if you have, you know, a lot of people do it, and again, everybody's different, but if you want to do something a little more if you have that little building or that area that is just for that, because I assure you, once you get into it, your neighbors are going to like you more. In, they're going to love you in the spring because they want a piece of the pie. They're going to want to come over. They're going to sit by the fire. And if you got a little bit of room where people can sit around and socialize and talk, it's a great gathering spot. You know, it's like a pub in a way. Come boiling time, you got neighbors showing up and you got your friend, your kids' friends are going to show up and it smells good. And like you said, Wayne, you might, next thing you know, if obviously I can't do it and Ken can't do it, but the hot dog thing, you throw a little, then your turkey cooker comes out, throw some syrup in that and you boil some hot dogs. And next thing you got the whole neighborhood over, but you do need room. If you're going to do it faithfully, you're going to need a little bit of room for the friends and neighbors.
Yeah. I've heard this whole theme through your whole podcast here is family and gathering. And, you know, from Ken, when you started with your dad, Chris, your father-in-law, it just screams to me family. And you're right. That's we go over our friends, the same thing. We hang around, we make pancakes on his WB Mason, you know, 2x3 or whatever it is. And it's really cool. And it's a time of year that, you know, there's really nothing else going on. So let's go over and boil sap. My wife, it's probably one of her favorite things to do, but she loves that the steam coming up, it, you know, curls her hair. And, you know, I said we had to start a spa over here, you know, as a sidekick that, you know, all the women can come in and get their hair steam, sap steaming. So, but yeah, so it's friends, family, and that's what's, it's really cool about maple season and making maple from my perspective and not doing it, but, you know, wanting to do it for those reasons.
Right. You know, Wayne, what I found too is, and there's so much more that goes with it. And, you know, when you take, I mean, we all like ice, everybody likes ice cream, but then dump some hot syrup on it. It gives it a new, it's a new way of having ice cream and you'll never go back. And something that's been big for us up here, and I know, you know, Chris Dyer, he used to come down, I'm going to throw some hot dogs in that evaporator. And it's like, Chris, I'll kill you. You know if you do. But he got us thinking, and now it's the biggest thing. You know, this was an extremely slow maple weekend for us because of the weather. But we got rid of 800 on just one day, 800 hot dogs, you know, maple hot dogs.
Wow.
And you could do that on your kitchen stove and take a natural casing hot dog and poke it full of holes with a fork, boil it in some maple syrup, dilute it so you don't fry your pan, and dilute it and boil a bunch of hot dogs. You know, take a quart of syrup and dilute it with same amount of water.
Do they have to be red hot dogs, Chris?
Pardon me?
Do they have to be red hot dogs?
No, we don't do red. We do the regular, you know.
I know that's a main thing.
Yeah, it is, but not for that. Yeah. But and then throw a bunch in the freezer and then what we do is we'll boil them into just before, because they'll pop if you boil them, just like in water, if you boil them long enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's soaking up that syrup, and then you throw it on a grill and caramelize it, and it's a huge hit. Yeah. And it's huge on our maple weekend, and people, you know, and like Ken said, you know, it's one of those things, it's not a secret. Sugar makers share their secrets. I'm with other sugar makers. I'm like, try it. You'll like the idea. People come for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but ice cream is so much to do with it. There's so much that you can do with maple. So it dresses everything up.
The sugar on snow thing, I've only had it once, but that was fascinating too. And historic.
It is a great day for it.
Today, yeah, you're right. Nice fresh snow. Yeah, if somebody's boiling out there, and I'm sure somebody is somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's, people are still going. I know some northern guys are still going probably above the notches. Mm-hmm. But I think southern portion of the state, probably same with you, Chris, probably Bangor south, they're all done.
I still have some, but it's cloudy, and it's because I do a bunch of pig roasts in the summer too, so I'm making some good, like that real, real, real dark motor oil. Yep. I'm making some of that for like pig roast right now and smoking stuff. So, but yeah, the stuff that put on the shelf is we're done.
Yeah. No, and you mentioned your the syrup on ice cream. I always do one up, and I'll put some crushed up walnuts on it.
Really?
Crushed up walnuts with maple syrup on vanilla ice cream, or even in a shake. Put in a blender, make a shake. That's where it's at. But no, it's funny how you bring up the hot dogs and Maple Weekend and stuff. And so in New Hampshire, we have a Maple Weekend. In Maine, you guys have what, one day, a Sunday?
It's only advertised the Maple Sunday, but most sugar makers now do Saturday and Sunday.
Yep. So basically what that is every March, probably a third and fourth weekend of March, all sugar makers just open up their houses. They invite people over. And it's funny because everyone seems to have their own, I don't want to say their own gimmick, but their own little different thing. There's a place by us that they do ice cream, or if you go to Vermont, they're called Maple Creamies. And then we don't really have anything here. I mean, I'm usually boiling, and people like trying the hot syrup right out of the evaporator. That's always kind of my favorite thing, is seeing people like, because a lot of people have never had hot syrup right out of the evaporator. It is very different. It hits you very different than room temperature, syrup on the table. And when people see that and get that, they're like, holy smokes, like, they're hooked. That's how you're going to get your customers for life, is you give them hot syrup off the evaporator. It's kind of going back to grandma's syrup. Like, it just brings you back. You kind of touched on it, of how many things you can do with maple syrup. This year I redid my website. We're Big Lake Maple. That's our name. I'm 300 yards from Lake Winnipesaukee, the biggest lake in New Hampshire. So when I came up with a name, it kind of fit for the Big Lake. So, but in my website, we do a blog that I post probably like once a month. And a lot of it is that stuff. It's what else can you do with maple syrup that a lot of people don't know? It's obviously for the simple stuff, pancakes, waffles, but anything that you would use sugar for, you can use syrup for. I mean, baking, marinades, glazing on the grill. We make sugar, make candy. There's the maple cream. We use a ton of it in tea, like hot tea, coffee, iced tea. You can just use it. That's the best part, is we always have some sort of sweetener for anything. Anything you want a little bit sweeter, but with a little bit of a different flavor, maple syrup is there. Okay.
No question. My wife drinks a lot of chaga, and she can't stand the taste of it, but she'll load it right up with maple syrup. And maple syrup's a very high antioxidant as well. There are health benefits in maple syrup. It's not like eating a spoonful of white sugar. It's a sugar, but it's good for you.
Yeah. And I mean, just touching on that, like, one of the things I like to do is I'll have like an ingredients list for Aunt Jemima next to like an ingredients list for maple syrup. And there's one ingredient in maple syrup. And it's maple sap. I mean, it's just boiling and boiling and boiling. And then that's what you get out of it. And then everything else is just corn syrup and preservatives and coloring. And, a lot of those maple syrup or pancake syrup don't even have maple anything in them. It's just straight sugar. And a lot of people are surprised to see that. And that actually brings me back to there was a story of these people came by for a maple weekend. And, in the sugar house, you got the big 600 gallon holding tank that is full of sap. And the guy's looking at it, and he's like, wow, you go through a lot of water. I'm like, that's sap. He's like, well, he's like, I don't understand. And I go, you take sap and you boil it, and that's how you get maple syrup. And he's like, so you mean it doesn't just come out of the tree like this? And he's like holding up his little cup of syrup. I go, no, I wish it was that simple. I wish we could just poke a hole in a maple tree and, hold the jug underneath and fill the jugs. But, it's just funny how, I don't want to say how clueless people are, but people who don't do it or have never been exposed to it, they just don't have any idea of, one, what it goes into, and like you were talking about, Chris, is how good it is for you because just how natural it is. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, it's been around for thousands of years, probably for a reason, you know.
And that's a good point, Ken, too. And that goes with the price. Obviously, it's not cheap, but when people realize, they look at the cost of that, and I mean, roughly right now, a gallon, I don't know, anywhere from, you know, high 50s to mid 60s, probably on an average right now. That's for the gallon. And but when people realize, you know, I go through between 15 and 20 quart a year, and I burn wood as well. And this year for me, it was a little over 40 gallons of sap for 1 gallon. So you got to get that wood in, you know, all summer long, you're spending your summer getting prepared. So, but then when people realize, you know, they see the work that goes into it, it's actually, you know, I'm kind of thinking at times, like, we really ought to be getting $1,000 a gallon. But yeah, but there's a lot of work that goes into a gallon of syrup, and that's not to discourage the people that want to do it in the backyard. It's still worth it. It's still a great fun thing to do. But be aware, you know, if you're going to put out one or two taps, you might as well start with 10 taps.
Yeah.
So you at least get something that you'll have a reward for it in the end.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know, like you just said, the one or two taps versus the 10 taps. Just to put a little bit of perspective on things, I don't know what you usually average, Chris, for, you know, gallons per tap. But I know, and historically, I've always been around 1 gallon of syrup per 6 taps. So, and that kind of held true this year. We did a little bit better. We ended up with like 120 gallons of syrup out of 600 taps, so we were more that 1 to 5, that 20% range. You know, some of the big guys in Vermont, they're up to 30-40%. There's a lady who down in Barrington who taps just sugars in all buckets, and they're right at like 2 to 1. You know, they'll get like a gallon of syrup for every 2 taps that they have. So that's something to keep in mind for someone new starting out. You know, if you're best case scenario, you're thinking 6 to 1, you're going to need 6 taps to make maybe 1 or 2 gallons of syrup. So for a whole season, not just at one setting. So that's something to take into perspective too, is, you know, the scale of how big you need to go to get the desired product.
And that's an average, Ken, because it's all about sugar content in the sap.
Yeah, it's all about the sugar content, which comes down to location, the type of maple, the type of way that you're getting the sap out of the tree, and just the year in general, how much sugar that tree was able to store from the previous summer and fall, how much it was able to store in the roots. That all varies in your sugar content.
Very interesting. And it's funny because my son was addicted early on, and like you said, the expense of it. So whenever we go out to breakfast or something, you know, he has to have his real maple syrup. And that's pretty consistent in New England that restaurants have real maple syrup available. But when you go to the South, it's just the funniest thing when he asks for real maple syrup and they're like, what? Yeah, we don't do that. You know, here's your corn syrup to go with your pancakes. And certainly, I don't know anybody that doesn't carry it in New England, actually. Andrew actually has a little, one of the little teeny bottles that he'll bring with him. So he's got it in his car just in case. So, and it's a little cheaper too. Than so he'll bring his own maple syrup in and put it on. So, but
yep, I've got the same thing. I got the little glass nips.
Yeah,
I've got them stored everywhere. I've got one. I probably have one in my cruiser right now because Dunkin's can never really get the coffee just right. So sometimes you just got to add a little bit. those little nips, I'll bring them on vacation. Me and my wife took our honeymoon to St. Lucia. All expense paid, you know, big all-inclusive resort, sandals. And here's Ken sitting eating breakfast with his little Big Lake maple nip, like pouring syrup on his breakfast. So
yeah.
But hey,
you can't go back. You can't go back. You can't go back.
And they're 1.7 ounces, so they're TSA approved, so good to go.
Yeah.
It's probably a good thing to trade two of the islands. I mean, I can see the barter system working pretty good.
I tried it. I tried that, but down there, they don't know what maple syrup is. He's like, is it honey? And I'm like, no, it's a little bit different. I was like, I'll trade you this for that. And he's like, no, I need cash. And I'm like, God, okay. I tried.
What's a real heartbreaker is the other day I was working with one of my guys, Mark Dahlia, and I went up and we were working on a report of a case that we got into this winter, and he said, you want some tea? So I got looking through his cupboard and I opened it up and there it is, the Aunt Jemima staring me right in the face. And I went home heartbroken, and he blamed it on his wife, but I don't know if I accept that. So
and some people that grow up on that, they can't kick it either, you know. They just they grew up on it, so when they get the real stuff, they can't deal with it.
I mean, I've been making syrup with my dad since 2015-16, and he's still a Vermont made corn syrup guy. I mean, I gave him we had a really good batch one year, and I thought it tasted like every other batch, but he really liked it. And he's like, make sure you save me a jar of that. I said, okay. And every year, every time I go over their house, it's still sitting in the fridge unopened. So that's probably 3 years old now, but
nice.
It's okay. It lasts.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And you guys both sell your maple syrup, so I want to get that plug in for you. Both Game Wardens, both been on Northwoods Law. So we can certainly promote you guys for sure. But I don't think you have any problem getting rid of it. But where they can find you, where they can buy your maple syrup, and hopefully we'll be sending this around the world.
Yeah, mine is simple. Simmons and Daughters Sugar House. They're not, I'm not on Facebook, but the girls
are. Yeah, I'm sure. Is that a .com, Chris? a .net?
Google us. Simmons and Daughters Maple. Send it to Daughter Sugar House. She'll find us. And then on Facebook as well.
Awesome. Thank God for the girls.
Thank God for the girls.
And Ken?
Yep. So we got biglakemaple.com. You can buy stuff there. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. And then we're in a few stores in New Hampshire as well. We just got into a storefront in... Actually, three storefronts in Portsmouth. It's called New Hampshire Made. It's all local New Hampshire people that sell through this store. They have a storefront in Portsmouth, and then they have a storefront in both 95 rest areas, liquor stores. So that's kind of been our, hopefully that'll be kind of our shoot up a little bit to start actually... You never really make money with maple syrup. It basically pays for itself and then pays for something new. If you were to include your time and give yourself a salary, you're going to be very heartbroken. But it, like I said, it's got to pay for itself. That's kind of the only way I can get around doing it and putting money into it. So,
and what's new? You said you're going to pay for something new. You got something on the wish list?
So no, it's more of paying things that I already bought. You know, like I said, it's that time and time and money balance. So, but we went to I was actually with Josh Boobier, and we went to Texas beginning of March, which somehow miraculously turned out to work out. It was one of those warm weeks that the sap didn't run because I was gone Monday through Friday, and I have help, but I'm kind of like the brains of the operation. So luckily we didn't really have any sap run, but while we were down there, I bought like a new filter press, which is, you know, $2,000, and just different things to make your time go better. So, but I don't have any big plans in the future for now. We're pretty maxed out at, you know, what I can do time-wise, what I can do physically, and so it works out. Mm. Like I said, you find where you want to stay or where you want to be and kind of plan to that.
Great. Any departing words, Chris?
I would just encourage, you know, for those lonely winter people in New England or where you have maple trees, give it a whirl. Like I said before, it's just a great way, or something great to focus your winter on. And no matter how big you get, again, as if it's just a few taps or whether you go big, but if that's what you're into, the outdoor type of living, the country style living, you won't regret it. It's just a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got to admit, I kind of put it on my bucket list to come visit you during maple season, Chris, because I can just imagine the fun that goes on in the Sugar Shack.
Yeah, it's we got plenty. I'm not going anywhere, Wayne. I'll die here. I'm dying on this hill.
That's good. No, thank you guys very much for sharing your knowledge and sharing experiences outside the game warden realm, so to speak, but the very woodsy still, that fundamentals that we all started with, that we're a self-sustaining thing that we can do. Like, you know, Ken said, we can make anything with maple syrup. It's the sugar. So we can do that. So great. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Been a pleasure.
Yeah, no worries.
Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other Game Wardens on our adventures protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experiences of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigation, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders,